Tasya prajna pratishthita.
Shanti, shanti.
Let's just take a moment. Sunday, 57. Yaha sarvatra anabhisnehaha tat tat prapya shubha ashubham. Na abhinandate, na dvaishte, tasya prajna pratishthita. Says saha, yaha, the one who sarvatra anibhisneha, has no attachment anywhere. Tat tat prapya shubha shubham, having attained tat tat. Tat tat means these things or these things. Tut, tut, whatever. Okay. Instead of one tut. So if you have one tut, means that. Mm-hmm. Having attained that, then that's having attained that one thing. But if you say tut, tut, it means having attained whatever things. Tut, tut, not just one thing. So having attained those things, shubha and ashubham, whether they be shubha or ashubha. Shubha means those things, shubha, those things which are auspicious, you know, that make me happy, that bring joy and happiness. Ashubham are those things which are inauspicious, like, for instance, disease or different types of things that cause dukkha, but even including your health and even including disease, because it's inauspicious. It's inauspicious. Okay. Those things that don't bring... things come to me that don't... that bring sorrow or suffering, they don't bring any happiness. And they're not meant to either. In the case of the Prarabdha Karma, if you say it's 50-50, some situations are very auspicious in that they make you feel blessed, they make you feel happy. Other things are kind of inauspicious. You know, they're not at all meant for your happiness. You know, they're meant for pain, for dukkha. If you're samsari, that's the whole thing. If you're samsari. If you have that prasada buddhi, then I accept the whole thing from Bhagavan. So no problem. That's the whole spirit of this verse, and it's very similar to the one before. So what he says there is, having gained these things, whether they be shubha or ashubha, right? Na abhinandati nadvaishti. The one who does not rejoice, and I'll explain these words, but just for the head of the translation, the one na abhinandati does not rejoice when this shubha takes place, nadvaishti, nor does that one hate an opposite, these opposites, does that evoke that in me when the Ashubha takes place? Tasya, for that person, prajna pratishtita, their knowledge, their atmajnana, their self-knowledge is pratishtita, is firm. So you have to go back to Arjuna's question, who is the stitta prajna? So here, prajna pratishtita. Pratishtita means stitta, the one who is well-rooted in their knowledge is very firm. For that person, there is no sneha anywhere. Sarvatra abhisneha, na sarvatra anabhisneha. Sneha, actually, it can mean attachment. There is no attachment anywhere. What sneha actually means is oil, that which is very viscous. And so, you know, if you get some oil on you, it just sticks everywhere. It sticks everywhere. So somehow that word sneha, which really means oil, or which is viscous and kind of gooey and sticks all over you, has been used for that also in terms of a mental disposition as attachment. I don't know. I just think it's funny. So, in any sense, this is the idea for this. It's not that for a agnani or somebody who is full in their knowledge, who has that jnana-nishtha, whose knowledge is firm and clear. It's not that when pleasurable events are taking place, that there's just, you know, no, as though the person has no feelings or no emotion at all. It's not that at all. It's that you can fully, Jivan Mukta, or somebody who has self-knowledge is enriched, that has so much freedom to really enjoy life as it unfolds, and those things that are there that are beautiful and designed to for pleasure. The jnani is so free, actually, to feel pleasure and to really enjoy the situation and appreciate also the beauty of some beautiful situations. I remember once, this is when Swamiji was close to the end, leaving us. There's some pujas that were being done at the temple, and Swamiji always loved the temple and the different rituals and pujas that we did there. So they were able to kind of carry him up in his wheelchair. They carried him up the steps to the temple where these special rituals were being done. I don't know if it was... I don't remember. It was a special day. Do you remember? It wasn't Guru Purnima, but it was Shivaratri, I think. So they're very beautiful rituals, and really rituals that were an honor, really, that were important to the sannyasis. So they did this ritual and had so many flowers, and, you know, that was just done to the hilt, and the temple also itself is very beautiful. So Swamiji was there appreciating, and his eyes were watering, and he was just totally overwhelmed by the beauty of it, and it is very beautiful. It's very sacred also, so that auspiciousness fills the temple, especially when some of these rituals are being done. If you're sensitive to that, you feel the blessing, the grace that's taking place as that ritual is being performed. So Swamiji was just kind of overwhelmed by the beauty of it. And then with kind of a tears coming down his face, he said, you know, I will never see this again. This is the last time I will be able to participate in this ritual. He said, it is so beautiful. And then they took him down and he was fine. But that was a very deep, beautiful emotion, you know. And it was true also. It was a fact. He realized that this is so much beauty. And just appreciating the grace and the overflow of Ishwara's prasadam, you know. He's totally appreciating that, overwhelmed by it, realizing this is his last time that he would see this particular, it was Shivaratri, this particular, you know, beautiful ritual. So he's totally overwhelmed by it. And the beauty, and then we took him down, he was fine, and we're moving on. That's what's meant. There's no abhisneha. You can totally be present to something which is so beautiful or so wonderful. Totally enjoy it. Be fully present. But there's no one there for jnani, for someone who has nishtha, and there's no one. There's no one there who's trying to hang on to it or to control it or make it last a little longer. There's just a complete love of the situation. Complete, and we'll see later, complete freedom to have affection, to have love, to have care, to have emotions, and to absolutely let them go, because there's no wanting to control. There's no need to control. So there's being present to what is, being able to experience it, and then life moves on, you know. So when he came down from the temple, then we were on to the next thing. Fully, completely. So that's what's meant here. So this abhi, the abhinandati, it really means that when something wonderful happens, you're so excited, you're so elated, you want it to continue, you want to hang on to it, you want it to happen again. There's this type of attachment that takes place, this sneha. Let me continue this, let me have this again. You know, an unwillingness. It's kind of a hanging on. The abhisneha is a hanging on, you know. But for jnani, there's total love and appreciation, but there's no hanging on. So that's the, for the, there's totally able to enjoy, appreciate, feel affection, but there's no wanting to control the situation. That's the idea. And in terms of the negative situations that come my way, the ones that are difficult or the ones that are painful are kind of a, you know, have to be handled. But that's what it is. They have to be handled. The situation is happening. There's an objectivity. Let me handle this. There's no dvesti. There's no hatred. There's no anger. There's no pushing away. There's just the fact of it. Because my ananda, in neither case is my ananda at stake. That's the beauty. And the ananda of my own being also isn't, I would say like this, the most beautiful, wonderful situations don't replace or compete with the ananda of my being. There's no competition there. Where you would say like, this situation, I wish this was myself. I wish I felt like this all of the time, not like I am. That competition is not there. And so how I am is not something that can be improved upon. It's a different order of reality, and there's no compete. There's no competition there at all. And so I have myself, my being, which is not to be surpassed. It cannot be surpassed. Because it's really the being of the entire universe. The entire universe is like an expression of that ananda. There's nothing that can compare with the wholeness of your own being, what it actually is, the one from whom this whole universe comes. And so for the jnani, reveling in my own being, I enjoy the sukha, the shubha, all of the auspiciousness that shines through in the creation. And for the dukkha, those things have to be handled. It's not like I'm saying, like Jnani is not saying, oh, I'm just so impressed. I'm so happy that this terribly miserable situation is here for us all to deal with. That's not the feeling. The feeling is we just have to deal with it. We have to be here and do our best to handle the situation. That's what it is. There's an objectivity. There's not a hatred or a despair or a depression. I don't become depressed over the situation that is not going my way or how I wish it would be. I simply am with it and I handle it. And I have the freedom to do that because neither sukha or dukkha or shubha or ashubha compares with the ananda or the being of myself. When I say it compares with, that's not even quite the right word. It doesn't replace or compete with my own nature, and my own nature isn't something that's coming and going. So being myself, I enjoy the shubha, what is shubha, and I handle what is ashubha. It's simple, you know. And so the one who can do that naturally is the sthita prajna, the one whose knowledge is firm. The one, the mumukshu, who is working for that sthita prajna, holds that as a value. And so when you find your mind running off, you just bring it back to that knowledge. That's why Krishna is talking here about how is a sthita prajna, one who is really firm in their knowledge. What are the qualities? Not how they walk or talk or sit, but what is it really like internally? He goes into detail about this so that that understanding, you recognize it when it's being said because you yourself are gaining this knowledge, but it becomes a luxury, it becomes a value for you. So that when the way that your mind is behaving comes into contrast with this knowledge, with this understanding, which Krishna is talking about here. And then you realize the possibility of doing that. Like if your mind starts getting torn away by the dukkha, you can bring your mind back to yourself and just say, like I hear Swamiji so clearly saying, just you have to be objective. Just be objective. Objective means here is the situation. You have to deal with it to the best of your ability. You know, enjoying your own being, deal with the situation. Enjoying the sukha, the shubha. When it goes, let it go. So that becomes a sadhana, right? I understand it becomes a sadhana. These things we can't do right away. Yeah? We can't do it right away and still that stitta prajna is there. That firmness in my knowledge is there. Where my firmness in my knowledge also understand, it means that the ananda, the self that I am, is what we call aparoksha, it's self-evident to my buddhi. Right? So who I am is not something that I'm striving to understand or is mixed up with my own sukha and dukkha and all of the different depressions and things that go on in the mind until the mind settles down. The problem is not there. The mind has settled down. And so the ananda of myself, which is not at stake, is pervading the buddhi. Because the buddhi is like a clean mirror or a clean glass. So your buddhi does not get in the way between, it does not cover or get in the way of your being or compete with your being. The emotions of the buddhi don't compete with your being. That's just the prajna. Then that objectivity is very easy because you're fine. You're already whole. You're already complete. There's no problem, you know. So yes, enjoy this and let it go. Or this difficulty, be objective because there's nothing wanting in myself. That's the stitta prajna. The mumukshu, the one who's gaining this knowledge, as your mind settles down and your knowledge becomes clear, and that karma yoga buddhi, prasada buddhi is there, the mind more and more owns that up. That's why we have this upayanishta and upayanishta. The upayanishta is that commitment to gaining the antakarna shuddhi, you know, that can really revel in this knowledge. So, let's do the next one. This 57 is kind of a continuation or restatement of 56. So, let's do the next verse.
Yada samharate chayam Kurmongani vasarvashaha Indriyanindriyartebhyaha Tasya prajnapratishtita
Yada samharate cha ayam Kurmaha angani eva sarvashaha Indriyani indriyartebhyaha tasya prajna pratishtita. So yada tada. So sometimes they leave the tada out. When they say yada and they don't have tada, tada is assumed, just so Sanskrit people. So yada means when, tada means then. So here it says yada, when, samharate. Samhri means to pull back, to pull inside. So when, cha means and when, ayam, this purusha, this person, this muni, this one who has self-knowledge, this tittadihi, when samharate, Kurmaha angani eva. Let's get through this part first. Kurmaha means a tortoise. So angani, just like the limbs of a tortoise. So when a tortoise is scared or some threat, something is coming into its vicinity that it's not sure about, it goes whoosh, and all its little head goes in, all of the limbs go on, its little tail goes in, and all that is left is this big, thick shell. Swamiji says, and that shell doesn't allow any scent coming out of it either. So it's like this, it becomes like a rock, right? And it can happen instantaneously. Oops, psh, everything gone, okay? So just like a kurma, a tortoise, pulls in, you know, retreats, its limbs retreat, sattva-shaha, from everywhere. Sattva-shaha means from everything, from in all ways. Everything just pulls back in, sattva-shaha. Like that, this person, this sthitadehi, indriyani indriyarte bhyaha, that sthitadehi, samharati, pulls in the indriyas, all of the sense organs, from its sense object. So indriyani, the indriyas are the sense organs. Indriyani, indriyarta are the objects of the sense organs. So just like a tortoise, a jnani just pulls in the sense organs like a tortoise. The tortoise does it just instinctually, you know. And so bhaya, they say in the commentary, Shankara says, bhaya, like something sets it off. Instinctually, it'll just pull that in. Where a jnani will, in a sense, instinctually, you know, just pull the sense organs back. But I have to tell you what that means. So tesya, for that person, prajna pratishtita, for that person, that knowledge is clear. The idea here is this. The sense organs themselves are just reporting. They're just reporting the data. So wherever your sense organ lands, if your mind is using the sense organs, it's just giving the vision of whatever happens to be or the sound that is coming in. It's totally neutral. So really, it's not that the sense organs are at any kind of have a problem here. Sense organs are just reporting data. But the thing is, because we have sense organs, Swamiji will kind of use this example in India of a lady going window shopping, you know. And so it goes, this is how he tells the story. Okay. So walking along, going window shopping, and I come up to a sari shop. And I notice, so this sense organs are just giving data, right? They're just giving data. So, but I notice this beautiful sari, data, totally neutral data coming in. But I notice a beautiful sari, you know, and I really like it. And I think, oh, that's really beautiful, you know, beautiful sari. Mm. Oh. And then I continue on, okay? As I continue on, it's already struck this beautiful image of this beautiful sari. And so as I continue on, my mind goes, just have to take one more look at that. And so we kind of go back, you know, go back and take a look at the sari. You know, something like 400 or 500 rupees, very costly. And then you say, 400 or 500 rupees? Such a beautiful sari. Well, I don't have 400 or 500 rupees. You can imagine Swamiji doing this. You know? And then, but I can relate to it. It wouldn't be over sari, that's all. It would be over sari. And so then, you know, she moves on. But all the way home, because it's a fancy now, it's happened. That sari has entered, you know, and I have a raga for that sari. And so now my mind is spinning around the sari, and how could we get that kind of money? And, you know, do you think that my partner would be able to chip in? So all of this going on, by the time you get home, there's a full-blown desire. It starts out with just the sense organs landing on the object, you know. And there's no, I would say like this, for samsari or for somebody who doesn't hasn't kind of analyzed this kind of situation. That just happens naturally in so many ways. The sense organs are just reporting the data, but bang, stops on one thing. There's that one object lights something up in your mind, and then the mind starts going around and around until it becomes a full-blown desire, right? Which that can then turn into like worry, because I really want this now. It can go all the way to a full-blown desire. I really want this. I really want this. Is there any way I can have this? I don't think I'm going to be able to get it. So this tension and stress are coming. And then there can become, depending on how far you let this go and how big the fancy has, that fanciful thought has consumed you or blown up, you can even start getting irritated. Like it go like this. He's never made enough money. He's never made enough money. I can't even get a nice salary. How could this have happened to me? I'll just tell you a little personal story. For a couple of years recently, though I wouldn't say I was an agnani about it, but nevertheless, this is what I'm talking about with fancy, that fancifulness. I was looking, decided something came into my mind that would not leave, and it was that I want a farm. I want to get a farm. I could not budge that at all. You know, because it was inconvenient also, because then I have to go look at all of these things, and I also, it was interesting, because I really liked my job. I had my cat, Tibby, there, and it's a beautiful apartment. I couldn't get a better apartment for my situation. It's perfect. You know, and why do I want to take on this whole farm thing? But anyway, it came to my mind, okay, and I could not get rid of it. So I think it's probably some karma. We'll see. Some real big dukkha where I got it and now I'm totally overwhelmed with this farm and we have to get rid of it. or it's a farm that has some purpose. We don't know, you know. I think it's a farm that has some purpose because a lot of us are enjoying it and we're, you know, able to have camps and classes there. And so I think it's probably a purposeful thing. But nevertheless, this is what happened. I looked daily at this realtor.com and Trulia.com, all of these real estate sites, every single day, and I had put in my criteria and everything, and the criteria I had to reach farther and farther away because the Bay Area is so costly, you know, but there was just nothing there. And even I went to look at some things that looked kind of nice in the picture, but when you got there, it was just a total dump. And so I wouldn't even go in, you know. And the cost was more than I could afford anyway. So I was looking, and for the most part, it was just in vain because there was nothing there. Once there was something, you know, we drove about three or so hours away to see it. It was kind of nice. It kind of tickled me a little bit, but no. So when by the time I got home, that's not the one. So this went on for about 2 years. And I mean, I was looking all of the time because I could not budge this thing inside, you know. This farm, I want this farm. Okay. I know you want the farm. So, after a couple of years, I went one day to realtor.com, and on the realtor.com, there wasn't even a picture of the farm. There was a beautiful picture of the Trinity River, which was part of the farm. The Trinity River is running through this particular farm. And it was a beautiful picture. And in my mind, I just went, that's the one, that's it, okay. So then I started reading on it, and then I looked at, there were more pictures that I could, that particular site had, and it looked, oh, that's really, really beautiful. And then I read more, and I realized that this place was 4.5 hours away from where I am. And so for me, that's the end of it. That's nice, but I don't want something that's 4.5 hours away. That's way too far. It'd be so inconvenient. But what about all the students, and what about working at have my practice and working at, you know, the school and all of this? That's not going to work. So I just put it down. I don't want it, you know, because I don't want that drive. So I put it down, but my mind kept going back and looking at the picture. I said, why? It's too far. It's too far away. You know, that'll be so inconvenient. Yeah, I know. But so, but I would keep looking and putting it away. Then I thought, let me just call the realtor, you know, just to find out a little bit more about it. So I called the realtor, had that conversation, you know, and he said something, I think at this part I told you the story before. He said something like, 4.5 hours away, well, I know I make that drive to San Francisco all of the time because my dad is in a rest home there. But, you know, I don't mind it at all. You don't mind it at all. And I said, oh, that's... And he told me what a beautiful place it was and how quiet, and it's just a very special place and all of that, you know, he told me. So I said, yes, I can tell by the pictures, right? And so I said, but it's. I just wanted to talk to you just to hear a little bit more about it. For me, it really is impractical. It's too far away, so... But thanks so much. He was a really nice guy, too, which, you know, they know how to be really nice. But he was a really, really nice guy. So I hung up, and that was that. And then the next day I thought, it wouldn't hurt to drive up there. Just, you know, this. I mean, I'm just saying, this was, you know, it's something you want. It strikes you. And then it's impractical, or it's too much money, or it's all of these things. And so you put it away, but no. No, the mind is still going around and going around and going around. So we drove up there, you know, and I saw it. And then I just said, this is the place. This is the place. And then we took it seriously, and from then on, this was the place, and that was it. So that's how it goes. That's how the mind is. The mind can, as we're a verse that we're coming to, we'll just... take you away. Even if you're a mumukshu, a jnani, it has the power to just take you away. Now, what I would say for myself in this situation, that's some sort of prarabdha there, because how could I have this desire for so long that I couldn't shift it, I couldn't get rid of it. And what was really strange, just to complete this story, as soon as I signed that bottom line, and now I have the place, that desire was completely gone. It wasn't negative. It wasn't like, oh no, I signed this and I don't want it. But I didn't want either thing. It's not that I wanted it or didn't want it. Whatever that was taking place in me was no longer there. And it has never come back. It's just now I have this place. That's what it is. But so, anyway, what I'm saying here is that if I had never seen that picture, right? If I had never seen the picture just walking along or thumbing through in the realtor.com, if I'd never seen that, none of this other stuff would happen. So the sense organs are innocent. They're only reporting, right? But they are reporting into your antahkarana, right? And that has a lot of associations that will hook on to that particular thing, and can blow into a full-blown desire, right? And so for a jnani, however, that can be that fancy. As soon as that fancy arises, you can go with it or not go with it. You have the freedom to pull in your sense organs. It's not really pulling in your sense organs. Your sense organs are innocent, you know. But your viveka, you know, and what is good for you and what is practical will trump that, you know. So that's what's being said here. For a sthita prajna, one whose knowledge is firm, that ability to pull back the fancy or contain the fancy, which is, you know what a fancy is? I mean, it's that first, it's before desire, It's before a desire. It's just this thing lights up. It lights up and it brings a little smile to your face. It's not a desire yet. It's just a fancy. It just lights up. You like it. It's really nice. But now I'm starting to work up. I like it. It's really nice. It's really beautiful. Boy. It works up into a full-blown desire. But it starts just with those sense organs. So the sthita prajna is the one who has control over that. Like a tortoise, say if a tortoise is not behaving just instinctually, you know, I choose to pull in those sense organs, which means I choose to break to stop that fanciful thinking. Because I'm not interested in that and get me into a big problem or whatever it is. So he compares that the kurma's kind of instinctual ability to do that instantaneously to the ability of a sthita prajna to be able to pull away from fancies that are not useful for you. Not useful for you. Because you can have lots and lots of fancies and your mind can build them just easily, quickly, naturally into a full-blown desire. And then once it's a full-blown desire, we're more or less in trouble. But we'll see that as we go. Let's go ahead and do this next one.
Vishaya nivartante
niraharasya
dehinaha
rasavarjam rasopyasya
parandrishtva nivartate
vishayaha vinivartante niraharasya dehinaha rasavarjam rasaha api asya parandrishtva nivartante. So he's talking now in this verse about how to pull back from these fancies or how to pull the sense organs back. Or how, you can take it either way, I'll show you both ways in reading this. How to pull my sense organs back to myself, or how to let the vishayas just go back into their own neutral position. Vishayas means the sense objects. How to just let them go in back into neutral, to just be there as themselves without my, clutching to them or needing them. So what he says here is that, we'll take it first as vishaya. The word vishaya has a lot of meanings, but how it's being used here is really as a sense object. Vishaya in reference to a book can be like the subject matter of the book. What is the vishaya of the book, the subject matter? The vishaya can also be in terms of sense perception, what it is I'm perceiving, the sphere of perception. So it has different meanings. Here, Shankara in his initial interpretation of the verse or commentary on the verse is taking the word vishayaha to actually be the sense organs, because we're talking about the sense organs pulling the sense organs back. So it's what's called upalakshana. If you take the vishaya to be the sense object, then that includes, it's called upalakshana, it implies the sense organs. So in his first reading, he takes vishayas as the sense organs themselves. And what he says here is the vishayaha in the nominative plural, the sense organs, vinivartante, they retreat into themselves. They pull in, like the tortoise. They pull back into themselves. Niraharasya dehinaha. For the dehi, means for the jiva, the one who's in the atma, the self that's indwelling this body, for that person, the indwelling jiva. These sense organs, the sense organs themselves, when that jiva is niraharasya, fasting. If I'm fasting, say, usually it's in reference to food, but now it's in reference to the sense objects. I'm fasting. It means I'm using my discipline, you know, to not purchase anything, to not get carried away by anything, just to be with what I have. So I'm fasting in terms of sense objects. But think about it, when we usually say niraharita, it's a person who is actually fasting from food. So if you've ever fasted, I'm sure many of you have, when you fast, like after the second or third day, you know, really the desire for food or for wanting to eat or those hunger pangs go away, you know. And so you can then easily kind of maintain the fast for 4 or 5 or 6 days or however long you want to, because you're free of the hunger pains. The first few days, or the first day especially, you really feel, can really feel hungry, and it takes discipline, you know, tapas, it becomes a tapas in order to not break that discipline because of the hunger that you feel. And so what he says is, for a person who is fasting, you know, or just through tapas, is keeping away, keeping the sense objects away, you know, or is not allowing my sense organs to get lost in, to get lost in the sense objects. I'm keeping them away. One example of this type of thing would be, there was a Swami, Swami Subodhananda, who was one of Swamiji's disciples when we were young in Rishikesh. And he was just a very beautiful man. His eyes were just shining with ananda and shining with tejas, you know, that brilliance. He was filled with that brilliance. With, you know, you felt he really is a mahatma. He's really very beautifully self-contained. Well, what he did for about 8 years, and this has happened before I knew him. He'd been with Swamiji for some time. He's also very, very quiet. He talked very little. But anyway, what he did for 8 years is he decided, after having been taught for some time by Swamiji, he wanted that jnana-nishtha. He wanted that jnana-nishtha. And so he went into a little, where Swamiji was living in Rishikesh. He went into a little hut. Just a little hut, big enough to lie down in and big enough to just sit in meditation. And so what he did was, for 8 years, really all he did, except, you know, having to take care of himself, take his bath, etc., and go and get the food twice a day that he would need, he just meditated for 8 years. He just sat in meditation, probably 8-9 hours a day, you know, being with himself, bringing the mind in, you know. The thing is that here he was meditating on himself, gaining jnana-nishtha, becoming a stitta-pragnaha. But initially, you know, that pulling the sense organs, he was fasting. He was actually fasting from the experience of any type of sense objects. Instead of having letting his sense organs wander about in the world, his whole focus was just on his own being, so that he could, his whole goal was to gain jnana-nishtha. So he did this for 8 years. So here, to get back to the verse, I'll bring him in a moment. What it says is, for the day he who is fasting, you can make that decision, for whatever reason, I'm going to control myself. I'm going to control my sense organs, you know. And controlling the sense organs, you're not having any experience of any, that nothing's going to be allowed, you know, for anything fanciful. That's just simply not allowed. I'm controlling. But the problem is, unless you're like somebody like Subodhananda, who is bringing his, controlling those sense organs as he is owning the ananda of himself, what's left when you're doing this fast, it's, you're doing the fast, you're not experiencing any of these sense objects, there's no fancies taking place externally that are given to you by the sense organs, but the rasa is still there. Rasa means the raga is still there. So even while you're controlling all of this, these experiences, you're not able to get rid of the raga. Rasa here means raga, the desire for it. And so then what happens is, you know, as soon as you let go of this tapas, you know, then the ragas just come back. It's kind of like, oh, thank God that is over. Now let me just be myself. You know, that's the idea. So unless there's something to replace that raga, because remember what the raga is. I want this so I can be happy. I need this to be happy. That's the raga, you know. And so if nothing replaces that raga, then the projection onto the sense objects is what is real. We're talking about realities here. What is real for that person is that my ananda and the sense objects are united. Not with all sense objects, just with this one in particular, or this one, you know. Or it could be even my raga, which is maybe one of the reasons I'm doing this, is so that I can gain certain powers, certain capacities, you know, that my mind gains strengths and capacities that otherwise, without this type of tapas, it cannot have. And so I do it for that. And then when I get that, you know, then I'm happy for some time that I have this and that my mind moves on because it's not an absolute, you know. Now I have this. That's a big problem. Once I have it, you know, once I have it, then I have it. Okay? But I'm still not happy. That's the samsara that we find ourselves in. I have it. I worked really hard for it. I did all kinds of tapas for it. Now I have it. It's mine. I know how to do that. I have it. But I'm still not happy. So that is exactly what we mean by samsara. My mind, my ananda is projected out onto something subtle or gross or subtle, or even onto dharma, onto anything. I need this. I need to practice dharma so that I can be happy. I have to practice dharma, I have to practice dharma, I have to practice dharma, I have to practice dharma. It works, but it's not that I can always be dharmic. We're not perfect, you know? And so there's going to be raga, dvesha, and sukha, dukkha, even in reference to dharma. I wasn't dharmic enough. I'm failing in reference to dharma. The only thing that's free of all of that is the atma. And the atma is the ananda that's being projected on, even to dharma, even to my charities, even to my subtle capacities, even to my physical wants. So what he says is, you do all of this tapas, you pull your sense organs in, you know, like fasting for food, but you know what? The desire for food doesn't go away. The desire for ananda doesn't go away. That's the problem. Because the ananda does not exist out there. The ananda is not objectifiable, it is me. And so if I'm objectifying it, then it is being superimposed on something which it doesn't belong on. That's the idea. And so it will go away. So the rasa will always be returning. So then he says, that's going to be the case. He says, but rasaha api asya param drishtva nivartate. But he says, But even that rasa goes away. Rasaha api asya, that rasa for him, nivartate, it retreats, it goes away. For that one, asya, for that person, param drishtva, who has seen, who has recognized the absolute, who has recognized the atma, who has recognized Brahman. Param means that which is limitless, the one who is limitless. So having recognized the Atma, the self, which is the very source of ananda, which is ananda itself, for that person, the rasa, the raga, goes away because all ragas have been fulfilled. Every raga, dvesha, involves a projection. But the projection that's involved is a projection of only one thing. And that one thing is the ananda. So if that ananda, which I'm seeking for in all of these different ragas, I have found, then the ragas become mithya. The ragas become preferences. The preferences remain, because I'm a human being. You know, I prefer this, like Swamiji says, you know, I prefer the idlis over the chapatis, you know. But I don't cry if I get the chapatis, you know. I don't get depressed or despondent if I don't get the idlis, I get the chapatis. I'm absolutely fine. That's a preference. Preferences are wonderful. They're exciting. They give me my life and my energy. You know, they give you means that you're free to follow your desires that are dagda bijas, that are burnt seeds. It means they can't take me into that samsara. They're mithya, right? Because I already have what I want. But you've got your prarabdha karma. You have your life that'll take you all the way through to end. You're meant to be something here. Whatever you are, that's what you're meant to be. And so then there's energy for that. There's energy for being yourself, for actualizing yourself, for actualizing this upadhi. You have the energy for it because that is why you're here, you know? And so you just enjoy that. With that prasada buddhi, and for jnani, the prasada buddhi has just resolved into me, my own self. My own self is the self of the prasada buddhi. Understand like that? My being is the self of the inner friend. I am the inner friend. My being is the grace, the blessing, the very being, which is Ishwara, the very self of Ishwara, which is the prasada buddhi. So as my knowledge before becomes firm, the one who has to invoke the prasada buddhi is no longer there, right? Because that one resolves into the one who is the prasad of the prasada buddhi. So that's the jnani. So there's a very slight difference in terms of the buddhi, the shanti and the buddhi for the jnani and the karma yogi, because the prasada, the self, the prasada of the prasada buddhi is the atma. See what I mean? The ananda that the mind enjoys is the atma. So there's just such a the mind that tremendous beautiful shanti is filled with ananda. The source of that ananda is only myself, and that's true. That is true, absolutely true, for the jnani and for the mumukshu who still has the kartritvam. Nevertheless, the kartritvam is there. They're practicing prasada buddhi, that prasada buddhi, so they get that shantavritti, that shanta, that blessedness. And the jnani has that naturally, right? But both are exactly the same. See that? It's an atma that's illumining both shantavrittis. One shantavritti is because the kartritvam, that doership is just gone, there's only Ishwara. The other is because the kartritvam, the doership, is there, but the doership is there in such a way that I welcome all experience with that prasada buddhi, so the same shantavritti is there. That's why it's just identical, as though identical. There's little differences here and there, but the experience is the same in terms of the vritti. So. Om Tat Sat.
Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.